Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. We have two guests this week. We've got Dave Kindred, who is a longtime sports writer. He spent time at the Washington Post, at the National, at Sporting News, and he's going to be covering the U.S. Open for Golf Digest. And then we've got Michael Kornheiser, who is a returning guest, and he is the chief grilling officer on the Tony Kornheiser podcast. We're also joined with our producer, Michael Schamberger, who covers golf for the Big Lead. I'll start with you, Dave. So what's at Erin Hills, there haven't been any PGA tournaments there before. There certainly haven't been any majors. What's distinctive about the course, and is there anybody whose game where you think that the eccentricities to the course play to their advantage?
Well, those are great questions, Ryan, to ask somebody who knows even part of an answer. You know, that's not me. I, of course, have never been there, never seen the place. What I've read about it suggests that it's a mystery to everyone. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. When I see a course that says it has several blind shots and it has a rough that you cannot escape from and it's a U.S. Open, I imagine that we'll hear a lot of bitching and griping from the players early. And so it'll be fun.
Michael Kornheiser, do you have any ideas about the course? Have you played there or done any research about it?
I did play the golf course this past summer, so I played it in what is probably closest to its current iteration. And the first thing you're going to notice when you're driving up is just the massive elevation changes from tee to green. You are quite literally going to be walking up 20 to 30 foot mounds just to get to the tee box. And then you go back down through these, you know, naturally contoured, you know, depressions as you sort of meander to the greens. I think the first thing you're going to hear players complaining about is just the sheer size of the walk. There are no trees on the golf course. You are completely exposed. Everyone's going to want to talk about how natural the design is, how it was basically cut from the land. But I think the players are going to really focus on the fact that it feels like an artificial walk and that it's a little bit brutal with just the sheer size of it. In terms of what kind of player it might favor, I think the easy answer is someone who drives it straight. While this is that undulating Midwest contoured golf course, it really feels like a Florida golf, you know, with lakes and ponds off every fairway, because that's what the fescue turns into. It's basically a water hazard. You are lucky to find your ball. You are chipping out during normal day-to-day play. They have markers on every single hill just trying to help people find their ball in what is, you know, purported to be a 5.5 hour par round.
Schamberger, do you have anything to add to that about like how anyone with a straight drive would be to their advantage or anything you've thought about the course going into the tournament?
I think it benefits somebody like DJ a lot. And somebody maybe like Rory McIlroy, if he's hitting the ball straight, because if they can keep the ball close to the fairway, then they've got a really good shot at getting in with wedges into these holes, you know, since there's not any trees.
Sticking with Dustin Johnson, Dave, nobody's won the U.S. Open back-to-back since Curtis Strange in 88 and 89. How good of a chance do you think DJ has to repeat?
Well, I think the great players, you mentioned McIlroy, I think the great players have a chance all the time. And certainly he's among the best players at the moment. So there'd be no reason to think that he can't play there. You know, he hits it long and straight. Somebody like Louis Oosthuizen will play well there, you know, because he hits it straight all the time. Yeah, and he's around the majors contention all the time. But there's no reason that Johnson won't be in the mix. None. I mean, unless he has a baby like halfway through the first round, you know.
What do you think, Micah?
Well, I think Paulina is scheduled for the C-section today out in California. If you look at early congratulations to the two of them. I think if you look at Dustin Johnson, the drive is by far the most visible weapon that he has. These greens, a lot of them actually play quite smaller than what they appear because there are these natural sections to it. And I think for him, you look at how good he is around the greens and you look at how good he is with that new spider putter, he is going to try and just manage these, what I would call the difficult holes, which would be, you know, holes 3 through 8 is going to be a big grind. And then you have a couple of holes in the middle of the back where you have to try and protect par before getting to these holes where you can show off the length in the last 4 or 5. And I think he's just going to be able to manage those long range putts and some of those long chips to just keep plodding along. And actually, you know, the long walks to the tee and back down, I think really sets up for his type of playing personality. We saw that in such great display last year at Oakmont, where he was really just able to stay within himself. And actually, I think some of those forced walks up the tees and back down will allow him to just retreat away from the golf course, where you already see other players being just overwhelmed by some of the, you know, eccentricities of it.
Schamberger, you have anything to add to that?
I agree with both of them. I also think that Oosthuizen has a really good shot. I'm not sure about somebody like Jordan Spieth, how he's going to end up playing. He hadn't looked too great over the last couple of weeks, but he does have a win this season, and he's won a U.S. Open before. So as far as I'm concerned, DJ's the guy to beat right now. He's the guy to watch. He hits the ball long, he hits the ball straight, and he's been really great around the greens.
That brings me into my next point. Dave, so Schamberger mentioned Spieth's struggles a little bit this year. He missed the cut for the first time ever at the Byron Nelson, and he tied for 11th at the Masters, which isn't a horrifying result by any stretch, but it's also not up to the standard that he's set over the last couple years. Do you see this as a time and place where he can rebound?
Well, he's a great competitor, you know, and he's a great player, you know, and the first round, I mean, isn't he paired with DJ and Keimer, I think?
Yes,
yeah, the
correct.
First round will be big for him. You know, he'll play well because he's a smart guy. He knows how to manage every course, putts great. You know, if he drives it decent, he'll be in there. Yeah, I don't think we can count him out. I mean, he's a great player. He's going to be a great player for a long time.
Michael?
I think it's very fortuitous for him that he's paired with Keimer and Dustin Johnson. We're looking at a group of U.S. Open winners. I sort of like how DJ and Jordan are now sort of aligned together after what happened at Chambers Bay. I think this first round, if he can get out of it without a double or worse, he's going to be in pretty good position, even though we saw the inability to charge Sunday at the Masters where we actually saw him falter. The big thing for him, though, has just been these big numbers, and big numbers are always in play at a U.S. Open, and big numbers are always in play when you have a propensity for a big block off the tee, and no matter how good he is with that flat stick, particularly with those par saves, you might not be able to save if you're going to get that triple bogey where you're hitting two off, you know, a 500-yard par 4.
Schamberger, anything to add?
I agree with that. If he's missing his drive and missing the fairways, then he's gonna struggle a lot. And avoiding those big numbers is gonna be key for him, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks. That's not to say that he can't win. He's already won once this season, and he's a U.S. Open winner, so he knows how to get it done. It's just, can he, you know, in his mind, get everything straight to where he can keep it all together and avoid those big numbers and give himself good opportunities on the green to make putts.
Dave,
that's why I think that first round pairing is going to be very important, because I think you know, Jordan needs to get the Masters out of his mind. I think that's what happened that fourth round. I think the previous Masters were still in his mind. And the U.S. Open is the best tournament in the world, and I don't think that he'll do anything as poorly as he did at Augusta. So pay attention to the first round.
Within that first round, it'll be great to see when he makes the turn, because he's starting on the back nine, and you have number one, which is a very gettable par five, and the second hole, which is, if not the shortest, one of the shortest holes with a very small green. But if he is right around Dustin, that, you know, there's a pocket in that early part of the back nine where you can make a bit of a move.
Michael, Rory McIlroy's coming off a rib injury. What's your understanding of how healthy he is, and how do you think he how do you think his game translates to the course?
I think he's healthy enough. Now, I think the bigger question is he able to string together four good rounds? I very much think we're going to see a 9-hole, 12-hole stretch at some point where he is at the top of the leaderboard or near it. Usually for him, this comes early on a Saturday when he already looks like he's out of the tournament. This golf course sets up so well for him. He is driving the ball just unbelievably well after really drivers would put him into the injury seat. There's been a lot of talk about the switch to the golf ball, and it looks like he's going to go all 14 clubs with TaylorMade with the spider putter. If he is, you know, the same putts that I was mentioning are going to be able to help DJ stay in there, those are the putts that Rory has not been able to convert. He tends to blow putts by and leaves himself a lot of 4 to 6 footers for par, which you're just not going to make all those on a championship caliber course throughout the entire weekend. So I really think we're going to see some inspired golf. I think he's healthy enough to play. I don't think he is prepped enough to maintain that over the entire course. I'd also like to see how he manages some of these par threes and some of these approaches into the stouter par fours, just because with all this talk about that golf ball and he's, you know, so pumped up about spin rate and how it performs, I want to see if he's actually able to get the ball inside what is probably poor average on those shots.
Dave, how do you feel about Rory?
I'd have to agree with all that because I know nothing. And Michael sounds like he knows a lot, so I bow to the greater wisdom.
Schamberger, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with Michael too. I think the way Rory's driving the ball right now, he's definitely going to give himself opportunities. He's kind of like Spieth in that manner that he's going to have a day where he makes a run and be towards the top of the leaderboard. It's just, can he avoid, you know, putting himself into a bad situation and walking away with a double or a triple? As for the new putter and the ball, I don't know how that's going to work out for him. I mean, he's only got how many rounds under his belt now with this stuff? So, you know, then that's kind of up in the air. But, I mean, it is Rory McIlroy. He is one of the best golfers in the world, and he could very easily turn in some really good scores and walk away with this thing.
He's in another group that I think is very helpful and calming for him because he's playing with Justin Rose and Jason Day.
Yes.
We're all being way too agreeable so far. We come up with something to drive a wedge in these relationships.
But, well, bring up the USGA then.
So anyways, there's maybe a dozen golfers under 30 who can win a major. We've talked about DJ, Spieth, and McIlroy. Jason Day's won one. Ricky Fowler, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, and Hideki Matsuyama all could win one. Golf does its best from a casual viewership standpoint when Tiger is dominating or Phil's in the hunt. But Dave, when's the last time diehard golf fans have had this much depth of young talent to think about?
I don't know, but I think since Tiger's kind of disappearance, since Tiger hit the fire hydrant, I think it became a different visual, different optics, as they say in politics. Without Tiger there, and I believe that from the start, from 2008 on, that anybody could win. Tiger became just another player, as weird as that sounds. I think he could have won. He didn't. But at that time, so I think for the last 10 years, there hasn't been a dominant player that you expect to win every week. there may be 10 people who could win every week. But I think since Tiger's disappearance, it's become a different game on television, a different game for the average viewer. I think I'm old enough to remember hanging on that, well, Arnold is going to win the Masters again. Arnold is going to win the Masters again. Arnold never won the Masters again. And a lot of people with Tiger had the same kind of obsession. He's going to come back. He's going to come back. Well, I never believed he was going to come back, and he didn't. So I think it became a different game, and all those people who had been not mentored by Tiger, certainly, but had seen the Tiger model, had realized they had to raise their game, had to be better than they could be. All of those people became great players. Rory, Jason Day, all of those people who were inspired by Tiger's work. So Tiger's gone, but Tiger's influence is still on the tour, to the tour's great benefit.
Michael, are you more or less interested now when the field is wide open, or would you look forward to a major week more a decade ago when Tiger was the presumed favorite and it was like a big hunt to see if anybody could take him down?
Well, it's hard for me to answer that because a decade plus ago, you know, when I was in high school, you would set your watch around when Tiger was going to play. And for me, it was so much more of just a family social event. You know, that was the first moment when I was invited into the grill room with all of, you know, the adults, was to watch Tiger finishing up late at a PGA Championship. I think what's fun is that you're learning more about just the depth of what I would call worldwide golfers right now. We're actually getting a good balance of just guys in their 20s from around the entire world. But there's nothing that can replace just the sheer wonder of being a kid in that Tiger era, you know, the late 90s, early aughts, with just the expectation that every single round, every shot was going to be great. I mean, I still watch those rounds, you know, on these highlight reels on the Golf Channel, and they carry almost as much excitement as whatever is, you know, the current round that's going on the PGA Tour.
Schamberger?
Let me say, Michael, that you didn't have to be a kid to be thrilled by that. I mean, I was thrilled by Jack Nicklaus in 1967, but I was no more thrilled then than I was by Tiger in 2000 at Pebble Beach. I mean, even Tiger talking about shots was thrilling to me. Still remember what par 5 late in the back or early in the back, 13 or 14, he decided he had to hit like a 4-wood instead of a 3-wood, because if he hit the 3-wood, it was going to roll to the back of a trap. And if he was going to be in that trap, he wanted to be in the front of the trap. You know, now I am lucky if I just hit the ball with the 3-wood. He's deciding that he wants the ball to stop 20 feet short of where it might stop with another club. To hear someone talk with that precision, knowing that he could then pull off that shot, to me was thrilling. 2000, you know, there was never a player better than Tiger. Every day, every shot was great. I did a thing I did on Marco Mira when Tiger was 19, I think. They were playing together in Florida all the time. And O'Meara, in the middle of an interview about himself, talked about Tiger and said, "This kid hits shots that I've never seen anybody hit." And I'm saying, "Mark, you've played with all of them. Nicklaus, Palmer, you've played with everybody." He says, "I'm telling you, this kid hits shots I can't imagine." And then we saw it done. It was great.
Schamberger, do you think that Tiger, now his downfall and his recent real life struggles have been very well documented, do you think he ever wins another tournament or is even in competition to win one on a Sunday?
At this point, I'd have to say no. I mean, the last we saw Tiger play decent golf was at the Hero World Challenge, and I'm not really sure that even counts, considering it's, you know, such an easy course and there were only 17 players in the field. But it's hard to say that he's going to be able to come back and compete against these young guys right now that are at the top of their game. Now, when you look at these young guys, they're great, but like Dave and Mike said, none of them are like Tiger. No one has been like Tiger. No one hits the shots that Tiger has hit. We've all seen shots. I mean, the shot he hit against Stephen Ames where the ball just, I mean, it was just, it was unbelievable. I mean, there are golfers right now on tour. Dustin Johnson hits spectacular shots. McIlroy hits great shots. But when you think of great golf shots, half the time, Tiger Woods is what comes to mind. And I don't think that he's going to be at the top of the leaderboard or compete anymore. I'm not sure if he'll ever come back at all.
Do either of you, Michael or Dave, think that he's going to be on the leaderboard on a Sunday ever again?
I don't. Go ahead, Michael.
I think a lot of it just depends on is he going to be willing to play in the tournaments that will allow him to mentally return to the prime time. If so, then I think he's able to slowly chip away at some of this scar tissue. There's a good chance, though, that the competitor of him does not want to go out to some of these second or third tier events, does not want to travel or move away from what has been a very controlled schedule over the last 15, 18 years, playing the events that he has a history of winning. But I do think it's going to take some of those minor league reps to get back there. It's also going to be the type where everything is so dependent on weather and setup. And we're going to continue to see, you know, more often than not, withdrawals at the same time that you get the top 10 in the next tournament, just because everything's going to be about where he is physically with regards to the draw of the actual tournament.
Dave, you don't see him getting back there.
No, I think physically. I mean, when Michael talks about scar tissue, I think he meant the mental scar tissue, but I think the physical scar tissue is what is just as important. You don't have, three or four back operations, back procedures now, a guy carrying around prescriptions for four painkillers. You know, I think he's in much more pain than he's ever allowed himself to admit. And I think Dan Jenkins at the start said the only thing that can stop Tiger is a bad back or a bad marriage. You know, and he had both, and one is persisting. Yeah, and he's 40 years old. Yeah, I think even if he were still in good shape, you know, he'd be in the contention now, but you start to lose it at 40. 40-year-olds don't beat 25-year-olds very often, even if you're Jack Nicklaus. What, he won one major after 40? You know, so it's, I think he's done. You know, I'd be surprised to ever see him play in a major tournament again.
Wow. Michael, you have a response to that?
This is just breaking my teenage self.
Yeah.
I agree with
well,
that.
Well, you had Tiger, I had Nicklaus, or Palmer, still wanting Palmer to win when it was clear to everybody in the world except me that he was never going to win again.
Schamberger?
I agree with that. It's tough because I've been the guy that's been open-minded and said, you know, yeah, there's a chance he can come back. There's a chance he can come back and play. There's a chance he could possibly get his mind right and, you know, put in a couple of tournaments and, you know, who knows what happens. I mean, he might – we saw before all of this other back stuff happened that he was tied for fourth at the Masters just a few years ago going into the weekend. Granted, that didn't work out very well for him. He didn't finish, tied for 20th. But, I mean, still, he's probably still got the skills there. It's just if he wants to put in the time and the effort and the tournaments leading into major championships that he's going to have to play in order to prepare himself. He can't just go out to Medalist and play around there and ride in a cart. He's got to be out in the sun playing with these young guys every day for 4 days straight and prepare all week in order for him to get back to a point to where he can compete with the talent that is on tour right now. And as much as it hurts me to say it too, I don't see it happening. I don't see him coming back and winning a major. I don't know if he'll ever come back and win a tournament at all.
Even the year that he won five times, he did poorly in the majors. Yes. I think that's some of the mental scar tissue that Michael is talking about. I mean, even Mickelson this week, you know, Phil Mickelson, who is still in contention, said he saw himself at the top of the leaderboard on Sunday and forgot how to win, instantly made triple bogey. He said he felt like he had never won a tournament in his life. You know, and Tiger certainly has more scar tissue than Mickelson. So it's just majors are a different thing. I mean, Bobby Jones a long time ago said that there's golf and there's championship golf. They're two different games. And I think Tiger has forgotten how to play the championship game.
Speaking of Phil, he's made the high-profile decision to attend his daughter's graduation and miss the tournament, which is significant not just because it's a major, but it's the only Grand Slam that he's never won. Now, the little bit of rain in the forecast in Wisconsin all week, can you envision a scenario where all of a sudden, like, there's a rain delay and he makes his tee time and we see him in contention this weekend?
I'd love to see that. That'd be a great story. You know, what I'm wondering is why the high school didn't move their graduation back, move it up a day. You know, why didn't Phil ask the graduation to be changed instead of missing a U.S. Open?
Yeah, it's weird that he didn't see these two events on a collision course further back. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it calls for a couple more questions.
I think deep down there's probably a psychological awareness on Phil's part that Erin Hills is not the golf course that is set up for him to finally get that U.S. Open. Maybe if he were a younger man, he could overcome some of the differences that sync up to his game. This is a guy who plays everything as if it's, you know, a roll of the dice, a gamble, and he is able to frame a narrative so that it fits what he wants it to be. And here you have a guy that if for some reason he gets that 4-hour rain delay and he's able to show up to the first tee and see a course blind and have Bones lead him around, even if he finishes dead last, if he makes the cut, if he competes, if he's, you know, in the hunt and has one more disastrous hole, he's at least adding to the myth of Phil Mickelson. And if he is unable to get there, let's say it's just not enough of a rain delay, he is able to basically retreat away probably from that awareness that this golf course is not for him, and he's able to use that positive energy and the goodwill of his army and all of this, you know, sort of branding that is going with this story and push that all towards the summer majors. He's had a bit of a resurgence in the last 6 months with the game. Obviously we have this weekend, you know, blip, but he's playing good golf for someone in his mid-40s, and I think he wants to make sure he's controlling that positive energy as he sets up to a golf course and a tournament which he thinks he has a better shot at now, which is the British, specifically at Birkdale. And then obviously, you know, the major over at Quail Hollow, and he's getting to that point with the major titles. If he's able to add one or two more, he's really changing the way that his name is going to be talked about within golf history.
Shamberger?
I agree with every word of that. Yep.
I do think he'll try to get there. I don't know if he will get there in time, but no matter what, I believe Phil's probably going to end up on a plane. And he'll end up at Erin Hills, whether he starts or not. You know, I mean, that all depends on the weather. I also think that the course doesn't exactly set up very well for him. But if for some reason he is able to get there and play, then you never know what could happen with Phil. I mean, we saw it last year at the Open. I mean, this was a guy who battled with Henrik Stenson, and they blew everybody else out of the water. And he's in his mid-40s, and the guy, he's one of the most talented golfers to ever play the game. He could easily put together a good enough round or two rounds to get himself in the hunt and head into the weekend if he's able to make it. But if he's not able to make it, I think he does go ahead and start focusing on the Open and then the PGA at Quail Hollow.
Are there any interesting stories from either your perspectives, Dave or Michael, that we haven't discussed that you think are important headed into the U.S. Open?
John Rahm.
I have no idea, Ryan. You know, I think the fact that it's a public course, that they've closed the course for a year to get ready, I think there'll be people interested in knowing what Aaron Hills is. You know, most of the players we know how they're going to play. But this is a, what I like about this is that most of these, well, not most, you know, all of these players will be new to this course. I doubt if that's ever happened before. And so it'll be interesting just to hear them talk about it. You know, I've long ago quit rooting for players. I root for stories now. I root for columns. Yeah, I think Phil, there or not, will be a good column. Aaron Hills, you know, I'll walk around and do something just about the course the first day. I mean, it's probably going to be, what, an 8-mile walk. It's 7,700 yards up and down, as Michael says. I think it'll be fun to just watch that happen.
I think if you're rooting for stories, you want to see either a major success and the redemption of the USGA, who has this year to try and set the ship right. Luckily, they are going to just the most traditional U.S. Open venues over the next 5-10 years, and the newcomers in that, you know, happen to be, you know, the torrid golf course of Los Angeles Country Club North. So they are definitely going to get back into what people expect to see. It's sort of unfortunate that their experiments of Chambers Bay and Aaron Hills happen to fall so close together. And obviously sandwiched in between that was the debacle at Oakmont, first with the weather and then with, you know, with the DJ ruling. So frankly, for the benefit of golf, I'd like to see the USGA get the story right. And I'd like to see this championship sort of live up to the hope and the design. I think beyond just the struggles of the USGA, I'm sort of looking at the future of golf with this idea of the success of a public golf course, because it's really not sustainable to just look to Brookline, Massachusetts, and look to the Hamptons as these enclaves that can save a major championship. Within the actual course itself, it's just interesting to follow how many times the course has changed hands from ownership and concept to design and tweaks in preparation for all of their minor majors. You know, the architect in me is a little sad that some of the cool, quirky pieces that they had originally, like a blind downhill par 3, were taken out for just an even longer par 5, or what was a really interesting Biarritz screen on number 10 is now just, you know, a pretty pedestrian opening back 9 par 4. So it'll be interesting to see if this golf course can sustain the travel and the interest that it needs in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years to really market itself as one of these destinations. So you're hoping for their sake for good weather, for no USGA fiascos, and for some winner, whether it's going to be one of the big names or someone who emerges from the field, that really lets it make its stamp known.
Schamberger, you wanted to discuss John Rahm?
Yeah, I agree with Michael, though, about the USGA. I really hope that they get it right this year. I hope there's no issues. I hope that this just goes smoothly. As we've seen with Chambers Bay and with Oakmont and the DJ thing, things just haven't gone well for the USGA, and that's been 100% their fault. And this is another experiment that they're trying. Hopefully it works. We'll see. But yeah, I'm very interested to see a guy like John Rahm, who hasn't seen very many courses in his lifetime, and he seems to play every one of them fearlessly. And he's really good, and you know, he's the type of guy that no matter what happens, you can probably look at him and say he's probably going to be near the top of the leaderboard come, you know, Saturday and Sunday, because he plays a different style of golf that, you know, doesn't seem to faze him at all. Nothing gets in his head, and he's impressive to watch, and I think he's good enough to win a major. Will it be this year? I don't know, but he's going to be fun to watch over the next few years, because he definitely plays a different style and is so aggressive and fearless when it comes to playing tournaments.
This week, I would love to watch John Rahm's caddy even more, or just as closely as the game, just because there are pockets of this golf course where he will be just rewarded immediately if he plays that aggressive game that we've seen. But he definitely needs to recognize where to just manage par, which is something that some of these younger guys, it takes them years to learn. with this style of golf. And, you know, it's interesting. The golf does not faze him at all. It's sometimes the reaction to the second shot or to the, you know, the miss. That's where we see that Jon Rahm temper come out, which, again, I think is why his caddy will be so important. And, you know, I'm just looking at the video, the Kevin Na video, where he's dropping the ball into the rough and can't find it. And I'm just imagining, you know, the on some of these semi-blind drives, you know, one of Jon Rahm's 330-yard drives that just takes one extra bounce and just goes 2 feet into a hazard where he's either chipping out, making six, or not finding it. And then what's he going to do for the next 3, 6, 9 holes?
All right, let's get out of here on this. Real quick, all three of you pick a winner. Dave, you go first.
Well, I find it interesting that we've talked for 25 minutes or so and not mentioned the winner of the Masters, Sergio. You know, he might be in there, he might not. I'm taking Oosthuizen.
Michael, what about you?
I am going to go with, let's go with Jon Rahm to keep this year interesting.
Schamburger?
I think we're going to have a pretty strange situation here, and I think DJ's probably going to come through and win again. He's at the top of his game. He's played well all season. If it weren't for that freak accident at the Masters, there's no telling what could have happened there. He was going into the Masters at the top of the, on top of the world. And at that point, when he was about to tee off, I believed that he was probably going to win the Masters. He's still playing well. And I think that now that he's got the monkey off his back and he's had so many different issues with the U.S. Open, that he will probably walk away with another U.S. Open win.
I'm going to be boring and piggyback on Schamburger and also pick Dustin Johnson to repeat. Thank you guys all so much for joining. I know it's pretty you have a very busy week headed into the tournament. Thank you again, Dave, Michael, and Schamburger. Hopefully we can do this again in a couple months.
Definitely.
Appreciate it,
guys. Thank you, Ryan.
Bye, guys.
Such turned strange.